There was a whole lot, really, what it was. But what I want you to notice is Abimelech's relation to God. That he has some relation with God here, some concept of it. Now, Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, wilt thou slay even a righteous nation? Probably the star of the nation, the king represented the nation. And said he not himself unto me, she is my sister? And she herself said, he is my brother, in the integrity of my heart, and the innocence of my hands have I done this. Of course, that particular time, there seems to have been no law of God against a harlot. At least I don't know what it was. God said unto him in the dream, where's the dream? Yea, I know that in the integrity of thy heart thou hast done this, and I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore suffered I thee not to touch her. So God recognizes that this man recognizes God. God recognizes him. Now therefore restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray or make intercession for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know thou that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine. That is the first time you have the word prophet in the Bible, in the Old Testament. Now here Abraham is spoken of as a prophet. Well, a prophet is a mouth for Jehovah. And Abraham then is a mouth for God. He's sustains a relation to God, not necessarily foretelling things to people, but speaking for God. That is the first time, the first occurrence of the word prophet there. Now, all right, now note he'll make intercession or intercede for you. And Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their ears. And the men were sore afraid, because apparently they might have told him about Sarah. At any rate, he had taken her to be his wife. And Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, what hast thou done unto us? And wherein have I sinned against thee, that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done deeds unto me that ought not to be done. You deceived me in this matter, mistreated me in it. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what sawest thou that thou hast done this thing? And Abraham said, now notice the four excuses that he makes. And Abraham said, because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. That was first. Now the second. And moreover, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And here's the third. I believe there's three excuses instead of four. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, this is thy kindness, which thou shalt show unto me. At every place whither we shall come, say of me, he is my brother. So he already made this up with her. Much earlier. So when they went down into Egypt, I turned over and read this to you when he was in Egypt in the 12th chapter, and he said, she is my wife, and I turned over and read it. Here's the second time this occurred, something like 20 years later. But the point is, he had made this agreement with her already, so here was a premeditated lie determined beforehand, and yet it was a half lie. But what is a half lie but a lie? And no difference, still a lie. Right, so his three excuses were here that I thought surely God is not in this country. And second, she is my sister. And third, we have made this agreement together. Back on the earlier. All right, so this is his explanation of the matter, so why he had done what he had done. And notice what Abimelech does. And Abimelech, But another thing that I mentioned, but I want to say more about it, is here he sustains a relation to Jehovah, God, by which God could reveal himself in a dream, and he recognized it was a sin against God. Take a man's wife. Now to have the harem was not a sin. Take another man's wife away from him was a sin. But I've often made the statement, I do not know what all was involved in the law that God had given to Adam and before the flood, and Noah brought out of the flood with him. We don't know what that covenant was. We don't know what the laws of that law were. But apparently from this, there had been some law that Abimelech is still conscious of. Even if, so you see, we're still back about between 2100 and 2000 B.C., along there somewhere, when we're dealing with Abraham. So this is not too long after the flood, even yet. All right, and so these are his excuses. Now Abimelech took sheep and oxen and men servants and women servants and gave them unto Abraham and restored him Sarah his wife. Now Abraham took this, though he would not take the spoil from those kings of Sodom and Gomorrah when they defeated the kings of the east. And Abimelech said, behold, my land is before thee. Dwell where it pleaseth thee. In other words, there's a disposition of my land, dwell where you want to. And he gives him a gift here to send him on his way here in gratitude of the fact that he had not sinned against God. Now notice, now I don't understand this verse very well. And unto Sarah he said, behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, it is for thee a covering of the eyes to all that are with thee, and respect of all thou art righted. Does that mean here now, this gift indicates here an appreciation of you and Abraham so that people will not despise you in their eyes because I took you. So I did not take you as a wife, and I've given you a gift here unto Abraham. It's something like that, but I don't understand it. I don't understand the language that he uses here. If the heart could be a covering to cover up anything that might they might say against Pharaoh. But it seems that that's the idea. To prevent anything being said about her, to her discredit. Now notice, and Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. Now that indicates that something had come upon Abimelech, upon his servants here, where they did not conceive and bear. But now then Abraham prayed, so he makes intercession for him here, and prayed, and his wife, and they healed, and they bare children. For Jehovah had fast closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. Now God had made the promise to Sarah that through her will come this son. All right, now he's protecting her in this way. Now again, we feel that Abraham shows that same weakness as he did in Egypt here, a weakness that we can't excuse. I don't think he can justify it. I don't think there's any justification for it. He's a man of faith in God, and surely there ought to have been the idea that God will take care of me and my family. Here twice he has done it. Later on, Isaac does the same thing. So it just indicates that sometimes there's a weakness in a person that crops out here and they crop out 20 years later. And it certainly does in him. And sometimes the same weakness crops out in our children as it did later on in Isaac. Well, that's a good place to stop. We've kept you exactly an hour, and that's long enough. I had intended to go longer, but I think that's long enough here. Two chapters and a half. Because I want to deal next time with Hagar and Ishmael here, from the book of Galatians here, that Paul finds an allegory in this incident that takes place here, and I want to deal with that, so we might get into it tonight, because I like to complete a thought when I have begun the thought. So next time, next Tuesday night, Lord willing, we'll still be here for our class. Why, we will take about two or three chapters next time. Now before we leave, do you have a question over what we've considered tonight? Try to keep in mind what we're doing now. Here then, we're following this idea now of the promise here to Abraham through Sarah. Right, so God has promised now, here in this 18th chapter now, that it is in Sarah, that his seed will come, that he will be blessed. We are still following the same promise here of the one that would bless the world, that would defeat Satan and deliver man from his power. We've learned here in these three incidents here, we've learned that God does not destroy until the iniquity of the people is full. That's when he'll destroy this nation. There's still enough salt, and it can just be a swing back to God and respect for him and his law, and a tightening down on crime, and the government carry out the purpose for which God ordained it, and putting the criminals to death or putting them out of the way, whatever the crime may demand. That can be a sparing of this country for a while yet. But if not, if we continue to go to the left as we have for the last 10 or 12 years, we're going over the precipice of destruction. It doesn't make any difference whether Reagan is president, or I'm president, or you're president, or Carter, or who's president, unless there's a change in the hearts of the people for the right, the nation is going over the precipice of destruction. Drive your peg right there and try to remember that. Because righteousness exalts the nation. The wicked shall be turned back into Sheol, even all the nations forget God. When the cup of a nation's iniquity is full, that's when the destruction comes. Paul said in Acts 17, about 25, that God made of one, and that one was Adam, made of one every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed season and the bounds of the habitation. The appointed season is how long shall that nation last, and the bounds of its habitation, how far shall it extend. God determines that. And when he says, here the peace of our coming no farther, that's where it comes. When God says, your time has come, your judgment is at hand, it's there. It's there. And only righteousness can save it. All right, any questions? Thank you for coming. Let me, before we go, I want to count us and see who all is here tonight, if I may. That makes 30. And little girls out there, isn't it? Make a 31. Thank you, sir. 31 of us. Thank you for being here, and class is dismissed. We're on to the 21st chapter of Genesis tonight, and we come now to the separation of Hagar and Ishmael as they are sent away from Abraham and the rest of the family. It's a rather sad occasion, and yet it was one that was absolutely necessary in order for God to accomplish and carry out his work. Now, we'll not go back over our past lesson, except for the 17th chapter. I do want to look back to chapter 17 before we begin chapter 21. Chapter 17 and verse 16. Well, I'll start with verse 15, I guess. And God said unto Abraham, as for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name, and I will bless her. And moreover, I will give thee a son of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples shall be of her. And Abraham fell upon his face and laughed. Now, I think that was a laugh of joy there at the thought of it. And you come down to verse 19, when 18, when he asked here a blessing for Ishmael. And God said, I will establish my covenant with Isaac, here in verse 19. For an everlasting covenant for his seed after. And as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I bless him, and I will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant, verse 21, the one I really want to emphasize, But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear unto thee at this set time in the next year. All right, now in the 18th chapter, we have the angels, Jehovah and the two angels, appearing unto Abraham, at which time they again promised Abraham that Sarah would have a son. All right, and Sarah laughed, or in verses 14 and 15. Why, she laughed here, then she denied laughing. In verse 12 it is, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am old, wax old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also. She denied laughing. Now, I think her laugh was more of a laugh of skepticism rather than one of joy. Abraham's had been one of joy. I think hers was one of skepticism. And the angel said, yes, but you did laugh. Then he went on in the rest of that chapter to tell of the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. The 19th chapter, we have the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Then in chapter 20, we had there the Abraham lying again, this time unto Abimelech, about Sarah as being his wife and being his sister. Well, all right, now down to chapter 21, with that 17th chapter 16 and 21 before us. And Jehovah visited Sarah as he had said, and Jehovah did unto Sarah as he had spoken. And Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age, at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare him, Isaac. That is to laugh or laughter. That's what God said his name would be called, but Abraham laughed at the thought, and Sarah had laughed, I think, skeptically in this matter. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Back in the 17th chapter, when God gave the covenant of circumcision, Abraham, all of his male descendants would be circumcised the 8th day. The medical profession has come to the conclusion through a study of this matter that that is the best time to circumcise a male, because the blood has reached a particular point there, that that is the ideal time. Well, we're not surprised, because that's what God selected that. I now notice further, verse 5, and Abraham was 100 years old. When his son Isaac was born unto him. All right, now how old then would Ishmael be by this time? 14 is correct, because Abraham was 86, wasn't he? All right, now, so Ishmael would now be 14 years old. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh. Now I think this is with joy this time. Everyone that heareth will laugh with me, will laugh as they rejoice with her in the bearing of this son in an old age after she was past the time of childbearing. So that would then make this son born unto her miraculous, not miraculous as was that of Jesus, of course, but nevertheless it was the interposition of God there to cause her to bear this son. Right? And she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should give children suck? Who'd have ever thought that? For I have borne him a son in his old age. So here is joy on her part, and she was about 90 at this time. Wasn't she 10 years older than Abraham? All right, she was something like that. And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. Well, that was customary or not, we don't know too much about that. Some think it was a custom. But at what age? That differs. Sometimes 1 year, sometimes two, and sometimes as long as 3 years before a child would be weaned. So if it was 3 years old by this time, why, that would mean that Ishmael was 17. But I don't know what age he was. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne unto Abraham, mocking. Now, the alternate reading is playing. Not just playing with him in the sense of being interested, but playing or mocking him
because he was supposed to be the heir, and Ishmael now was the older one, and of course he resented that. So it would be a mockery, mocking him or mistreating him in some way there. Right? Wherefore, she said, now Sarah said unto Abraham, cast out this handmaid and her son, for the son of this handmaid shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous of Abraham and Abraham's sight on account of his son. Now God speaks. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad and because of thy handmaid. And all that Sarah said unto thee, hearken unto her, her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Now Abraham had listened unto Sarah before when he should not have listened unto her. Now he must listen unto her this time when it is necessary. Now, I want to turn to the fourth chapter of the book of Galatians and notice the application that Paul makes of this. He says that in this, or this thing contains an allegory. Now, an allegory is where you take a thing, put it beside something, and teach a lesson from that. Now, I want you to note carefully that he does not say that the thing itself is an allegory, but that it contains an allegory. Look at verse 21. Tell me, you that desire to be under the law, or under law, do you not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by the handmaid, and one by the free woman. Now this handmaid is from a word that meant a slave. A girl, a servant or slave. Now she was a slave, and one by the free woman. Howbeit the son by the handmaid is born after the flesh, but the son by the free woman is born through promise. Which things contain an allegory? For these women are two covenants, one from Mount Sinai, bearing children unto bondage, which is Hagar. Now this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, an answer to the Jerusalem that now is. For she is in bondage with her children, but the Jerusalem that is above is free, which is our mother. Now let's look at this for just a moment. It contains an allegory, and a very important one. All right, here then is Hagar on the one hand. Hagar is the bond woman. Hagar is the bond woman, but she is the handmaid or a bondsman. She's a handmaid, and therefore her children would be in the same time. Right? Now here then, and she signifies Mount Sinai. Right? She symbolizes Sinai, and hence the covenant that went out from that. Right? Now here is Ishmael, and born after the flesh. Right? Now, that thing contains an allegory. This, the Jerusalem that now is, and the Jews that now were. Right? On the other hand, here then is Sarah. Right? Now, Sarah here is the wife. And hence, as the wife, she symbolizes the Jerusalem that is above. That would be Mount Zion. She symbolizes Zion, and therefore I should have put the covenant here. I failed to put that down, didn't I? I ought to put it in here. The handmaid here, or rather she which symbolizes the old covenant. Right? Now this one symbolizes the covenant of promise. Here's the covenant of promise, which is spiritual in its nature. And here then is Isaac. Isaac is the son of promise here, which is spiritual, and pertains to the spirit nature here, and that would be the Jerusalem that is above. Jerusalem above, and the spiritual people, or the Christian, the church here. Alright, now this is your allegory. Now let me look at that again here. It contains an allegory. Don't ever let anybody say it is an allegory. It isn't. It is a true historical account of what took place back there. Some try to say that, well, that was just an allegory. Paul said that was just an allegory, not anything historical about it. No, that's not what Paul said. Yes, ma'am. Ma'am? Well, it's wrong at that point, because that is not what Paul is saying. Paul says, which they contain an allegory, because it's, and that's an error there. An erroneous translation. I'm glad you brought that out. I don't ever read the King James, so I don't know what it says, ma'am. Does it? All right, well, that should have been it, because that is not an allegory. It contains an allegory. Now, the historical fact, now what does it contain? Here it is, that Hagar is over against Hagar. She's the handmaid, the wife, representing Sinai, representing Zion, the old covenant, the covenant of promise here, and Ishmael and Isaac, flesh and spirit. All right, and so here the Jerusalem it now is, and the Jews is over against the Jerusalem above, and the Christians or saints. All right, now notice. Now he quotes here from Isaiah, and I'll not go into that, but the Jerusalem that is above is free, which is our mother, for it is written, rejoice, thou barren that bearest not, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not, for more are the children of the desolate than of her that hath the husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are children of promise. But as then, he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the spirit. And I think that spirit should have been small f that, but we'll not argue that. So also it is now. Right? Here was Isaac, was persecuting or mocking, Ishmael mocking Isaac. So here the Jews now are mocking the Christians. They are mocking the saints. Now, howbeit, what saith the Scripture? Cast out the handmaid and her son, for the son of the handmaid shall not inherit with the free woman. All right, now that's a quotation from this passage here, where Pharaoh says, cast out this handmaid and her son, for the son of the handmaid shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. Now the apostle goes on to say, wherefore, brethren, we are not children of a handmaid, but of the free woman. All right, now notice that the handmaid and her son were cast out. All right, in the allegory then, what then is cast out? Here then is Jerusalem, your old physical Jerusalem, and the Jews here of this covenant, which are in bondage here, these are cast out. Now, I think that is an unanswerable refutation of the premillennial view that God intended to set up the kingdom. The Jews as a nation rejected Christ, so God postponed the church, the kingdom, I mean, substituted the church, and will come back and accept the Jews and receive them back unto himself. No, God says cast them out. So those of the flesh are cast out. And so the Jew today doesn't mean any more to God than a Mexican or a black man or a you or me or anything else. The flesh is of no value in the individual relation to God. So here then, those of the flesh are cast out and are not to inherit with the other. So there'll be no inheritance of the Jews with the Christians, unless they become Christians. There's a great deal of ado made here a few months ago over this Baptist preacher. Where was he? Down in Dallas. I remember Brother, I read about it. Brother Britnell talked about it. Or maybe it was, maybe it might have been in Little Rock. Yeah, Little Rock was. Who made the statement that God didn't hear a Jew's prayer. Well, man alive, the Baptists just like tore that fellow apart over that. Well, that was hypocrisy. I don't think they believe that themselves to believe anything, because they have rejected the Christ. God's not going to hear the prayer of that kind of an individual. And, well, I don't care whether he's Jew or Gentile. The reject of the Christ, God doesn't hear the prayer of that individual. Right now, God doesn't have a thing for the Jew that he doesn't have for the Gentile. And all that he has for either one is in Jesus Christ. Now, that's the allegory that Paul is talking about, that contains back there. And I think it's a very important point for us to understand what is happening back here if we are to understand what Paul says over here in Galatians. And if we understand what Paul said in Galatians, that helps us then to understand what was taking place back here. When she listened to Abraham the first time when she shouldn't have. Now then, this time, God said, you listen to it. Because the handmaid, the son of the handmaid, cannot inherit with the son of promise. Well, that's pretty clear there. All right, and so, for now then in verse 12, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And also of the son of the handmaid will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. Well, God had promised that to Hagar back when she was fleeing from Sarah. Now God says that again, that he'll make a nation of him because he's your seed. And Abraham rose up early in the morning and took bread and a bottle of water and gave it unto Hagar, putting it on her shoulder, and gave her the child and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Now Beersheba hadn't been named at that time, but Moses is writing this long after Beersheba had been established. And so they understood what he was talking about. But I want to note this. It says he gave her a bottle of water and bread. Probably he gave her money also. Now, this is just mentioned as the sustaining necessities that he gave to her. Now, you try to think about that. I imagine that was an exceedingly sad day to Abraham. Either he loved this boy. The boy was 14, and no doubt a very charming, attractive lad at that time. And Abraham had come to love him dearly. He wanted to keep him, but God says, no, send him away. I'll take care of him. But at any rate, you imagine the sadness of the old father here as he makes this provision, sends them away, and no doubt watches them as long as he can see them as they go into the distance. Well, where did they come? If you remember your geography here, as you come down down here, here is Sinai down here, here's the coast here, and Egypt down here, the Nile coming up here. All right, now over here is Beersheba. Beersheba, as you come down, and here's the Dead Sea. It was somewhere about here. Sure, was this a series of ports down here on the border of Egypt? The word means a wall. Now, there was not a Chinese wall built there, nothing like that, but a series of Egyptian forts there to serve as a wall to keep these invaders out. Now, somewhere in this area in here, she was wandering. Now, the fact that she was wandering indicates here that apparently she had lost her way. Right? And notice now, she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And here's Beersheba up here, and so somewhere she's down in this area here. And continued there. And here's an interesting incident in that life. And the water in the bottle was spent, and she cast the child under one of the shrubs. Now, he was between 14 and 17 years old, 14 when Isaac was born. Isaac probably was between 2 and 3, so he would be around somewhere between 15 and 17 years of age. So it doesn't mean that she was carrying him, but it means she was looking after him. Now then, when he reached the point, the water was gone. She put him under a bush. She went over here where she could watch at a distance. She couldn't stand to see this lad of hers die there. Well, there was a slight lack of faith there, because God had promised to make a great nation out of it. So her faith should have sustained her, but it wasn't as strong as it might have been. Right? She cast the child under one of the shrubs, and she went and sat her down over against him a good way off, as it were a bow shot. About as far as you could shoot an arrow here. For she said, let me not look upon the death of the child. Well, imagine her feeling. And all of this grows out of sin, or at least lack of faith, and that to me is a manifestation of sin, on the part of Abraham and Sarah, back there when he listened to her and took her handmaid by which to bear seed that God had promised, and they weren't trusting in the promise. So sin never does work out very well, does it? Now, of course, this woman, I think, was not responsible. It was Abraham and Sarah that were responsible. Right? And God heard the voice of the lad. I wonder, the voice of it, was he crying or was he praying? He'd been brought up under Abraham. I know he's bound to have been brought up with faith in God. Some faith. How much, I don't know. But just a lad. We know boys of 14 to 17 are still very immature. But at any rate, God heard the voice, either crying or praying or whatever it might have been. And the angel of God called her, Hagar, out of heaven and said unto her, "What aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is." Right? So, fear not now. Well, she'd forgotten that promise back in the 16th chapter. God had made back there, somewhere back there, when God had promised, I think about 16:10-12 it was. Well, there God had said, when she was wandering in the wilderness, having been driven out, how that God said she'd bear a son, called his name Ishmael, and that God would make of him a nation there. Well, apparently she's forgotten all that. And several years before, at least 16 to 17 years before, what God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called and said, "Fear not, for God hath heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, and hold him in thy hand." I'm sure that a boy of 16 years, she wouldn't take him up like that. But you lift him up and sustain him. Stand by, sustain the lad. "For I will make him a great nation." Now you repeat the promise made in the 16th chapter, made unto Abraham, and back in verse 13 here when he was driven out. Now, "And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad drink." Now, opened her eyes, having the eyes of your heart enlightened. That is, by his providence, he caused us to find this well. I don't know how. But at any rate, he caused us to find this well of water here. And she filled the bottle with water and gave drink to the lad. And God was with the lad. And he grew, and he dwelt in the wilderness, and became, as he grew up, an archer, very adept with a bow and the arrow. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran. And his mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. All right, now here's Paran. Is this land down in here? You remember Kadesh Barnea was down about here somewhere. And down here was your land of Paran, the wilderness of Paran, which we studied at some time in our study of the history and geography. So he then lived in this land of Paran, where later on Moses and the children of Israel dwelt in that particular land. Right? So he dwelt in that. But she took him a wife of the people of Egypt. Well, she was an Egyptian, you see. So now then, the lad would be half Egyptian and half descendant of Abraham. Now then, took a wife, so his children would be 3/4 Egyptian, only 1/4 related to Abraham's family, to Terah, and to that particular family. But he still sustained a relation there. Took him a wife out of that land. All right. Now there we're going to leave him for a moment. And notice now a covenant that Abraham made with Abimelech at Beersheba. And it came to pass at that time, and you have a question over this that we've studied, of Ishmael here. But God had said back here that he would be as a wild ass. His hand would be against every man against him. Because what you would call there a mixture there of the Egyptian and descendant of Abraham and so on there. And he was probably the father of the many, some of the Arabian, present Arabs, no doubt, their ancestor. All right, and it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the captain of his host, that is Abimelech's host, spake unto Abraham, saying, God is with thee in all that thou doest. Now I want you to note that. Abraham's life had been such that it had deeply impressed Abimelech. And he was prosperous, and no doubt that impressed him. He wants to make an alliance with this a prosperous man who had been able to take his servants and go and fight against the people that had cut Kedorlaomer and his back in the 14th chapter. And he wants to make an alliance with him. God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore swear unto me here by God that thou wilt not deal falsely with me, nor with my son, that is my offspring, nor with my posterity, nor with my son's sons, that is my descendants, but according to the kindness that I have done unto thee, thou shalt do unto me and to the land wherein thou sojournest. Abimelech had, he'd shown him kindness back there when Abimelech had taken Sarah. God had showed him he'd done wrong, and he chided Abraham for what he had told him. Now then, he gave Abraham some gifts there and told him that here's the land before you. Take your sheep and your flock wherever you want to go. So he'd been kind to him. Abimelech impresses me as a man that in some way recognized God. How, to what extent, I don't know. You see, we are not too far from Noah. And of course, a good white way by now. But there was still a knowledge of God been handed down from Noah on down to these descendants. Right? And Abraham said, I will swear. And Abraham reproved Abimelech because of the well of water which Abimelech's servant had violently taken away. Now, Abimelech didn't know about that. And Abimelech rebukes Abraham for not telling him, which he should have done. And Abimelech said, I know not who had done this thing. Neither didst thou tell me, neither yet heard I of it. But today, right now, it's the first I've heard of it. Why have you told me about it? Well, that was Abraham's fault. And Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them unto Abimelech, maybe for a sacrifice, maybe as a gift, and they too made a covenant. And Abraham set seven ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. And Abimelech said unto Abraham, what mean these seven ewe lambs which thou hast set by themselves? And he said, these seven ewe lambs shall thou take of my hand, that it may be a witness unto me that I have digged this well. Right? Now, so I don't know then what the oxen were up here. That he gave him the sheep and the oxen here. Possibly these were for a sacrifice. I don't know. But it seems since these seven serve as a seal, as a gift of this covenant, that apparently the oxen and the sheep that he'd given him before may have been to offer a sacrifice, may have been for something else, maybe just a gift. I don't know. But these seven now do stand as a witness here that I have digged this well. Wherefore he called that place Beersheba, because there they swear, both of them. Now this word Beersheba was thought by some for a good while to mean the well of the oath. But scholars now believe that is not correct, but it's well of the seven, because Beer means well. Right? So here then, Beersheba, which is located about here. Here's Beersheba, maybe been a little farther over, something like that. I hear Beersheba, the well of the seven. The seven ewe lambs here that were given here to bind this covenant between the two of them. So it shows then that Abimelech was an unusual man to them among these pagans or heathen by this time. Abraham was unusual, but Abraham should have told him earlier about this, but he hadn't, because there they swear, both of them. Right? So they made a covenant, Beersheba. And Abimelech rose up and Phicol, the captain of his host, and they returned into the land of the Philistines. And Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and called her on the name of Jehovah, the everlasting God. Alright, now we've had another name or two for Jehovah back in 1422. Here, lifted up his hand unto Jehovah, God Most High. Now that was Jehovah, God Most High there. Let's find what I'm looking for here. Alright, that means El Elyon. Have it also back up in verse 18. Priest of God Most High. That is, Melchizedek was priest of God Most High. And Abraham said, I've lifted up my hand under Jehovah, God Most High, Professor of Heaven and Earth. Right, that was one name by which we come to know him, that particular one. And there's another one or two in there. I can find what I'm looking for here. All right, there was another one I wanted to mention. I'll find him just one second. If I, 17:1, God Almighty, I remember that now. 17:1, where Jehovah said, I am God Almighty. That's El Shaddai, or Shaddai. All right, now here are two names for which we have now. A little later he's called Jehovah Jireh. That is Jehovah Seeth, or Jehovah will provide. But now here he's called the Everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned in the land of the Philistines many days. Right, now here we have him here at Beersheba. There's Beersheba here. Now a little bit later he moves on up here to Hebron, where we have him. Yes, not here, right. Up here to Hebron, some 27 miles from Beersheba. All right, and so now comes the sacrifice of Isaac. Now this is, I think, the faith of Abraham reaches its climax.